No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important and affect the lives of all of us. Tonight, we're very fortunate to have with us Pam Smith, who is the new police chief, relatively new police chief in the District of Columbia. She has more than 25 years of law experience and has a decorated career where she's received numerous commendations and awards. While in the United States Park Police, she served in major city field offices across the U.S., including San Francisco, New York, Atlanta, and here in Washington, D.C., rising through the ranks to become chief of police of the U.S. Park Police in 2021. She's done it all. She's been a canine handler, dealt with explosive ordnance. She's been a law enforcement trainer. And we're so lucky that she's taken time out of her busy schedule to be with us tonight. Thank you so much for being here, Chief. This is very gracious of you. So let's start right at the top. Okay. The chairman of the city council said before the Congress that we don't have a crime crisis. The newspaper makes it sound like we have a crime crisis. People are worried that we have a crime crisis. Would you describe what's going on in D.C. right now as a crisis?
I do not describe it as a crisis. I do think that there are some areas that we really need to focus on. Clearly, public safety is at the top and certainly a priority, not just for myself, but also for our amazing mayor. Mayor Bowser, and I'm in contact with her on a regular basis. And, you know, my team is very, very focused on how we can continue to drive crime down here in the District of Columbia. I can say that we've started off the year pretty good in comparison to year-to-date crime counts from 2023. We are currently negative 10% in violent crime. We're negative 12% in comparison to last year in property crime, and our overall crime is a negative 11%. And in all seven of our districts, we are trending downward, negative in comparison to the same time last year. And so, no, I wouldn't call it a crisis. I think that there are several areas that we really need to focus on. And I think with Mayor Bowser and Councilmember Pinto's introduction of the Secure DC Omnibus Bill, there are some things in there that can help us really trend downward when it comes to our robberies and especially our theft. We do find that there has been an increase over the last year. I'm sure everybody was really keenly focused on, you know, the retail thefts and carjackings and robberies. But I can tell you we have been trending downward over the last 7 days. When it comes to carjackings, we've only reported three. We have three carjackings over the last 7 days here in the District of Columbia, which lets me know that the initiatives, the strategies that we have, our vision for driving crime down here in the District of Columbia is working.
Well, let me ask you, is the fact that there has been an increase over the last couple of years in crime, how much would you say would you attribute that to the pandemic? Has the pandemic been a real problem in pent up frustration or whatever is causing a rise, especially in juvenile crime? Is that a major factor? And can we expect it to come down now because of that?
Well, I think, I mean, any time you have a situation or a circumstance such as a pandemic, I mean, clearly there are parameters around how things shift and how crime trends and patterns shift. But I also know that, you know, in 2020, we had the George Floyd riots, and it was really significantly here in the District of Columbia, where certain laws were changed. And even though I wasn't physically working for the Metropolitan Police Department, but I was working as a deputy chief of our Homeland Security Bureau here in the District of Columbia with the U.S. Park Police, and then promoted to chief of police. And that those laws and those decisions that were made back there significantly impacted the District of Columbia to a point where we could not hire officers for almost a year and a half. And so that really hurt us when it comes to even our efforts today when we talk about the staffing levels that we currently have today. I believe that, you know, when we talk about our juveniles, I mean, there's so many things that are taking place with our young people. You know, I'm not sure what this pattern of behavior has become when it specifically is related to why they feel they have to, you know, wear ski masks and mask up in order to commit these various crimes that they're committing. But what I can tell you is that the Secure DC Omnibus Bill is going to be impactful to us when we're able to hopefully the council pass the bill so that we can also make sure that we're targeting this kind of behavior with juveniles wearing full ski masks. I know there's been some misconception about what the expectation is around engaging or targeting the behavior of those individuals who are currently wearing ski masks in order to rob or carjack individuals. And I think the Secure DC bill will give us another resource or a tool in order for us to be impactful and engage with these members of our community who are committing these crimes.
Well, given what you just said, can I ask you, how many sworn officers do we have at this point?
Today we have 3,324. I did graduate a class of 11 on this past Friday, and then tomorrow we will be hiring another 14 new officers who will join the Metropolitan Police Department as new recruit officers.
And how many, if we could give you all the police officers you needed, how many would you need? I'm sure that your wish list would be big, but how many do we need to be fully staffed?
I think we're really trending around the number 4,000. If I can get the numbers up to 4,000, it will really help us in various areas across the district be able to have the resources that we need that we can deploy and then give our offices the opportunity to really engage in good employee well-being areas, wellness, because as you know, the many, many activities that take place here in the District of Columbia, we still have less numbers, but the things that we are expected to do have increased significantly. As we think about First Amendment activities, protests, and demonstrations here in the district, you know, our officers are responsible for making sure that we provide safety for those individuals who would like to be able to voice their First Amendment right. And we will do that, and we will continue to do that. But we also have an obligation to ensure that our areas of residence within all seven districts and all eight wards, we are providing the best police service in those areas as well. So as you know, if we can get to 4,000, I think we will be able to do a lot more effective in our space. But we are recruiting heavily. I did launch a new recruitment team back in August, end of August, beginning of September, and we have been really doing some great work here in the District of Columbia with hiring as well as outside of the area. We have our prospect days in which we host one Saturday out of the month where we invite anyone who wants to join the Metropolitan Police Department to show up at our police training academy. And we have a team of folks on staff to help you get through that process.
Well, since you just brought that up, is there a website or something that you want to give out, Chief, that people can go to find out information about that if they do want to attend?
Absolutely. Go to mpd.dc.gov, and on that webpage, you will find an opportunity for you to apply to become a member of the Metropolitan Police Department. mpd.dc.gov.
I don't think a lot of people realize, Chief, how much when what you just said, how much the D.C. police have to do, MPD has to do, in addition to what regular police officers have to do. And let me tell you, from interacting with MPD over the years, I knew Chief Conte and Chief Newsham. D.C. cops are really good cops. They're good. You know, they do it all. They're part tour guide. They're part cop. They handle it all. And I don't think people realize that. I don't think people realize that when the president leaves the White House, there's always a police. There's always a D.C. police car with them. You know, that we escort dignitaries, and that you're right, that you do the First Amendment. You keep people safe during First Amendment protests. Yeah, and D.C. cops are really nice cops, let me tell you. they are. I went to San Francisco. I'm telling you, Chief, I was at a convention in Los Angeles many years ago, and I stopped to ask a cop for directions, and an L.A. cop looked at me like, what do I look like, a tour guide? You know, I thought he was going to arrest me. But in D.C., they're very affable, and they're very... they're willing to help wherever they can. So go ahead.
And if I may add to your point, you know, I think it's a lot more than I don't think people fully understand the volume of work that Metropolitan Police officers do every single day. I mean, you talk about, being tour guides, but we're also expected to be teachers. We're also expected to be counselors. We have a Youth and Family Engagement Bureau that work with at-risk youth. We've also brought back Officer Friendly. I mean, a lot of people have talked about Officer Friendly over the years. And since I've been in this space for the last 7 months, I hear a lot of families in the neighborhoods talk about how they want Officer Friendly back in the schools. So last month, we brought Officer Friendly back to the schools. I think we've been in 36 schools across the District of Columbia. And I think next week, I'm going to KIPP D.C. I mean, actually, this week, I'll be at KIPP D.C., where we will also bring Officer Friendly back into the school. So there's so much that people don't really appreciate about the officers, that the work that they do every day. And, you know, when they put on that uniform, they come to serve with compassion and with care. I see it, and I'm out in the field with a lot of them. Some of them go into their own personal funds because they care about what happens to the residents that are in our communities. They focus heavily on our youth. They focus very, very heavily on our seniors and the majority of the residents, and even our visitors. I mean, to your point, you know, when they're dignitaries or foreign dignitaries here in the District of Columbia, you know, it is our Metropolitan Police Department that are providing those escorts to and from the president, vice president. They are everywhere. Road closures, rolling road closures, street closures. And don't forget, for every single special event that takes place here in the District of Columbia, I can guarantee that there will be our Special Operation Division officers and any of the officers that are assigned to the various districts providing support so that we can enjoy the fruits and the events that happen here in the District of Columbia.
And let's never forget that on January 6th, when the Capitol Police were overwhelmed, it was MPD that moved in and saved the day. I mean, we should never forget that. And that's not saying anything bad about the Capitol Police. They're an excellent police department.
Correct.
But they were overwhelmed. MPD came in and secured the facility. And our democracy goes on because of the bravery of those officers that responded that day. So we should never forget that. And let me just put in a plug for Officer Friendly. Okay. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Newark, New Jersey. And when I was six years old, my grandmother took me to a parade in New York City, and I wanted to get a better view. So I went up on the steps of the New York Library, and we got separated. Well, because there was an Officer Friendly visit to my classroom in the first grade, I just walked up to a cop and I said, "My grandmother's lost." And he looked at me and he said, "Oh," he said, "Okay." And he took me, and you won't believe this, Chief. They put me on top of a horse. with a mounted police officer, and he just held on to the back of my pants, and they walked me to the police department. I felt so cool, you know, but until my grandmother got there and kissed me all over my face and made me feel like the 6-year-old that I was. But, you know, I was missing for 8 hours, and there was no problem. Wow. The police, I was missing from my grandmother. I wasn't missing from the police. They had custody of me, but, you know, but we didn't have the internet in those days. But, you know, that may have saved me, that I knew to walk up to a police officer and say, I know your job is to help me, so please help me. So I'm all for officer friendly. I think that's a great program. Let me ask you about federal felony prosecutions. You know, a lot of people don't know that we prosecute juvenile crime here. And there's been a lot of complaints about the federal prosecutor not prosecuting enough crimes in D.C. Is that a problem? Is that really a problem? And what can we do about that? Do you have any sense of that? Do we need to figure out a way to get them to prosecute more crimes, or are we just letting people go because they won't prosecute?
Well, what I can say is, you know, I've only been in this space 7 months, and I've worked very closely with the U.S. Attorney's Office when it comes to a lot of our cases that we presented to them, specifically our juvenile cases. I think in November, U.S. Attorney Matt Graves did prosecute 11. I actually charged 11 juveniles under Title 16 as adults for carjacking, and to me that was a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. He's been very, very supportive in spaces where we just had the Walgreens robbery taking place, and he has been very, very supportive in those areas where I've had the opportunity to really meet with him on, if not a bi-weekly basis, to really discuss our cases. I can only speak about the time that I've been here. I cannot speak about the time that I was not here, but I know that we're working very, very closely with the U.S. Attorney's Office to ensure that, you know, these felony cases that we bring to them are cases that they prosecute.
Well, you know, they do take a lot of heat for that lately in the press. And actually, we've invited him on the show, but they say they can't be on the show because I'm an elected official. But anyway, I mentioned to you before the show that I was a block captain. In the neighborhood watch. I was involved in two crimes on Capitol Hill, and I got to tell you, they both resulted in arrest. And in one case, the perpetrator was armed and pulled his gun on the D.C. undercover police officer. And this guy was the coolest guy I've ever seen. I freaked because I was at the end of the alley with another cop. And this guy pulled a gun on the police officer, and he just said, you know, he showed him his badge, and he said, it's not going to work for you today, buddy. And that was it. The guy hit him with the gun and ran, but, of course, he was apprehended. And so I know that our involvement, you know, and it's funny, I just got to say this. The officer said to me, this was the second crime I was involved in where I called the police. And he said, well, you're a good citizen. And I said, you know what? I grew up in a bad neighborhood, and it's not about being a good citizen for me. My grandmother taught me that if you see somebody robbing your neighbor's house and you don't report it, that the guy will be back next week to rob your house. So it's really a matter of survival for us. It's not a matter, you know what I mean? So what can each of us do to help the police? Are there things we can do as a community to kick in without and help the police without putting ourselves in harm's way?
Absolutely. You know, in all of our districts, we have our citizens advisory committee meetings that are held once a month with all the members of the various districts and community members, being able to meet with and know who your commanders are within all 7 districts or your 8 wards. Very helpful to share information. A lot of times what I found is that Residents sometimes don't like to share information because of, they think that there's retaliation or so forth. But we encourage the residents to be able to share information that's happening within their community. We also conduct community safety walks in all of our districts once a week. And that's another opportunity for the community to be able to share with us some of the things that they see that's happening so that we can make sure that we are engaged, making sure that we are listening and hearing what the community needs are from our law enforcement agency. One of the things that I will say is that there have been a significant number, and I appreciate the community members for doing this, who have been sharing information with us. A lot of them are participating in the camera rebate program where we can have the opportunity that when crime is happening in their particular area, we can get that camera video camera footage and be able to apprehend those suspects or subjects rather quickly. And those are things that I think can be very helpful for us if you would just share the information with us and attend some of our community meetings that we have within our various districts. We do not encourage anyone when someone becomes a victim of a crime to fight back or anything like that. If it's property, right. My recommendation is to allow them to take it because we can always replace the property. It's very challenging when we have people committing these kinds of crimes, but we want to share with you, it is not up to you to fight the crime. Allow the police to do what we need to do in those spaces and places in order to apprehend those suspects.
Well, I remember, just to put an exclamation point on that comment, I remember seeing a show one night where they had the deadliest man. They called him the deadliest man on the planet. He was a black belt and everything. So the commentator said to him, "What do you do if somebody walks up to you with a gun and tries to rob you?" And he said, "You reach around behind you very slowly and pull out your wallet and hand it to the guy, because you, no matter how tough you think you are, you can always replace your credit cards and your cash." And, you know, and it's just stupid to take the risk, even if you think you're prepared to do it. So, that's important. And I should tell you, the crimes that I was involved in, I stayed at a safe distance. I just observed what was going on, and I called the police, and they responded. And in both cases, they made an arrest. I resigned as block captain after that. I moved on. I moved to another neighborhood. But anyway, what about coordination in, you know, because another problem we seem to have here in Washington is that, you know, we're surrounded by Virginia and Maryland. And when I was an ANC commissioner and head of the, I live on Western Avenue, which divides the district from Montgomery County. I just happened to know the captain of the Montgomery County Police Department because I went to high school with him. So we had him come to my house for a meeting, and we had the 2D, whoever was in charge of 2D. It was Newsham, actually, who was in charge of 2D at that time, and they came together and to have a meeting because we had crime that happened on Western Avenue, which had jurisdictional problems. You know, sometimes the Montgomery County police came in, sometimes the police. And they said to me, it was the first time in history that they could remember that anybody from Montgomery County and D.C. sat down and talked. And I couldn't believe it. You know, I said, well, what happens if they rob a store in Montgomery County and the guy runs into DC? He said, we called DC police and we said the guy ran into DC, you know? So let me ask you, has that changed? Is there more coordination with like Montgomery and Fairfax and Prince George's?
Oh, I will tell you, the relationship that we have with Montgomery County, Prince George's County, Fairfax is as far away as it is geographically from the District of Columbia, Alexandria Police in Arlington. We've not been, more closer than where we are right now. We continue to coordinate and collaborate when it comes to some of our traffic safety compliance checkpoints. We all come together as two or three agencies to ensure that We are engaged in traffic safety on the borders of the areas between Montgomery County and District of Columbia, as well as PG County and the District of Columbia. And as you know, the same type of crimes that are happening here in the District of Columbia also are not binded, if you will, by jurisdictions. I mean, these folks come into the district, they go to the district, and so the collaboration and the relationship that we have, Metropolitan Police Department, we have with all of our neighboring jurisdictions, law enforcement agencies, is really remarkable. I mean, I can say it's one of the best that I've seen since I've been in law enforcement. You know, we're getting ready to launch our real-time crime center, and all of the agencies that I've mentioned, police agencies, that is, have signed an MOU, a memorandum of understanding, with MPD to be housed or co-located in our real-time crime center. We'll be launching that here in the very near future. But I say that to say that we meet with our partners, not just our PG County and Montgomery County and Arlington, but also our federal partners. We meet with them on a weekly basis just to discuss the things that are happening in the District of Columbia or here within the region so that we can be able to provide support for one another. That is the one thing that I can tell you that has been very, very instrumental in helping us. If you've noticed some of the press conferences that we've had, you'll see FBI is there. You'll see DEA is there sometimes. You'll see some of our neighboring jurisdictions, because the thing about these is that we all recognize that we cannot do this work one without the other. And so when there's a need for the Metropolitan Police Department to support the other agencies, we provide that support and vice versa.
Well, you know, I live on a traffic circle, and so we have a lot of accidents. I'm telling you, the cell phone ruined my wife and I, because if we put a payphone in our front yard, we're the first house off the circle. When we first moved in, we couldn't go by where people didn't stop to use the phone because there'd been an accident on the circle. And but I was out there one night, and there was a drunk driver, and the Secret Service pursued him. They came to me and saw me standing out on the street, and they pursued him, and they got him, and they held him for the D.C. police. Now, can they do that? Do they have authority in the District of Columbia? Because we have so many police departments, right? We have the Park Police, and I know they have authority, and we have the Secret Service, and we have the FBI. Are all these officers empowered to do things like make traffic stops and if they want to and other things like that?
Absolutely. And they make traffic stops by law based on what is adjacent to their jurisdictional area. So we appreciate the support from the Secret Service in their particular area and adjacent to the area that they have authority around to be able to, you know, arrest some of the drunk drivers and also apprehend suspects that are committing any type of crime in their area. So it's been very helpful for us. When you talk about traffic safety, you know, Mayor Bowser's Vision Zero is very, very important to the Metropolitan Police Department. In June, when I served as the Assistant Chief of Police for our Homeland Security Bureau, we launched our traffic safety compliance checkpoints, where we host checkpoints specific for traffic safety twice a month in different areas across the District of Columbia. And the reason why, based on your conversation, is because we do recognize that there has been an increase not just in accidents, but also in traffic fatalities. We work very closely with NHTSA and other programs to ensure that we are getting the message out to the general public about traffic safety. There will be some billboards coming up here relatively soon, and it is my expectation and what I've done. I will say what we've done thus far is that I've actually increased the number of traffic safety officers to our traffic safety unit so that we can be more intentional about ensuring that we're providing traffic safety compliance checkpoints in other areas across the district.
Well, I'm all for that. I drove a motorcycle for years. I still do occasionally. I have a son that drives one. And that's, you know, things like people that run red lights and don't signal when they change lanes. That's very dangerous for those guys. So I'm glad to hear that. And I know those lovely guys in Congress, those lovely Republicans in Congress that love us so much, are trying to get rid of our traffic cameras. And it's funny, right? We complain about them interfering with everybody, but when they with everything, but when they said, let's get rid of the speed cameras, nobody really had much to say. It seems like it's a popular idea. But anyway, the question I have is, I was in India, and they have great technology in India. Mm-hmm. We met with the police chief of Hyderabad, a city of 7 million people, and they have face recognition software where he said they caught 350 people through their, and so far that year, through their face recognition technology, where they could actually get somebody who was out on bond and didn't appear for their hearing or whatever, and the technology would automatically transmit a picture and a description of the charges against the guy to the nearest police officer, and they would go pick him up. And do what about technology? Do we need more technology?
Well, you know, we do have CCTV cameras. The mayor has made it a priority as part of her support for ensuring that we look at have access to new technology by increasing the number of CCTV cameras that we have in the District of Columbia within the next couple of years. And so when we think about technology, I'll say this and just be pretty direct about it. You know, most folks aren't too happy about AI and artificial intelligence and facial recognition. And so I think that's something that, you know, we will have to slowly work ourselves into that space if that's the direction that we want to go in. But I tell you, with having access to cameras, access to CCTV footage, access to surveillance camera, and also access to even folks' Ring doorbell camera has been a viable and useful tool for us when it comes to us solving some of the crimes that have been committed in D.C. And so clearly, as I think about what other types of technology that we may need, there are some things that's on my mind I have yet to discuss with the mayor, and I don't ever want to get ahead of her, but there are some things that we will be talking about in the very near future to increase the different platforms of technology that will help us with solving crimes rather quickly, and also solving crimes here in the District of Columbia.
The thing that distresses me most in what's been going on lately, Chief, and I don't know if you have any insight into this, but why so many children? Why 14-year-olds? You know, we had a 14-year-old shoot an NFL football player to steal his car, and we had a congressman carjacked by kids, and you know, we just had a 14-year-old killed by a security officer who was trying to, you know, carjack his car. Why so many kids? Why so many kids with guns? Do you have any ideas about that? I mean, because that seems like a new phenomenon to me.
Well, I wish I had the answer to that. That's certainly something that we're looking into, not just with here in the District of Columbia, but actually across the United States. I attended a gun trafficking conference, if you will, in Atlantic City last month, and it was very. It's interesting to see, how juveniles are engaging in these types of crimes on a day-to-day basis. What I will say here in the District of Columbia, one of the things that I thought and I still believe was very, very helpful with young people in schools was our school resource officers. School resource officers were able to really get into the schools and build those relationships with those young people, and information would flow to those officers and not just flow to them, but they would gather that information, do their investigative work to really understand what was happening with our young people in the schools and also with what was happening in some of their homes. I think that there are programs that are out there for our young people. And I think there has to be the wraparound services. And what I mean by that is that, there's the prevention piece that I talk about all the time. You know, we've got to do something to prevent these kids from going down this path. Because when they get to us, the law enforcement, we have to do the job that we've been sworn to do with regards to, you know, arresting and apprehending these young people. And we know that's not the way for them to, we want them to go, but unfortunately that's where we are right now. And when they go through the court system, you know, the expectation is that if they're not going to be held, which I believe some of them should, then the programs that they are directed to, ensuring that there is good follow-up, ensuring that these kids are, if they have to report back to court, that they're showing up for their court dates, or if these young people have to report to a particular program, making sure that they actually show up for those programs. And one of the other things that I think, you know, having more activities for our young people after school hours. We do have our parks and recreation centers that I think do a phenomenal job, but how do we get our young people to those spaces and places? Again, I've talked about our Youth and Family Engagement Bureau, where we work with at-risk kids oftentimes every single day here in the District of Columbia. But it takes more than just the Metropolitan Police Department to be able to navigate through what's happening with our young people. You know, working very closely with our D.C. public schools and working very closely with our Office of Attorney General to ensure that we are providing good wraparound services for our children, working with Children and Family Services Administration, all of these D.C. government entities collaboratively coming together to make sure that we're doing the right thing for some of these young people who get engaged in some of this nefarious activity.
Yeah, I think that's so important because the most dangerous person, I think, in the community is somebody that has nothing to lose, you know, that we have to get these people, you have to vest people in the system to get them to act properly, I think, sometimes. And it bothers me that progressives seem to focus on only the perpetrators. You know what I mean? They don't want, I understand that we don't want to ruin these kids' lives because they've made a mistake, but it seems that a lot of times we ignore the victims, which is something that you have to deal with all the time. You're on the other end of that equation because you're always dealing with the victims. And sometimes it seems to me that we think the only victims are the people that have committed the crime. So let me ask you, there's been a lot of talk about, there's two people on the city council right now that are facing recall. And it's because of some of the things that were done by progressives, $15 million cut to the police budget, the review of camera footage so that police officers could make the report, pretrial detentions. We're trying to fix this stuff now. How important is that? It looks like the new crime bill that's been put forth by the mayor and by Councilwoman Pinto addresses several of those things.
And I think this bill is very, very important to the District of Columbia as a whole, but certainly to our law enforcement officers as we continue to try to do this work. And when you talk about, you know, I wasn't here when the $15 million was cut from the police budget, but I will say that you know, the pretrial detention is really, really critical because, you know, people have to take what's happening in the District of Columbia very seriously when it comes to crime. I mean, once they're on the other side of the law, there has to be something in place for folks to know that we're serious about this. My recommendation and I've said this on many platforms, that we need the citizens, the residents in their particular areas or wards that they live in, to continue to speak to their council members to pass this bill without amendment. I mean, that is the ask. That is what we need to have. We can get this done. I think we can get a lot of things accomplished with regards to what we need to do specifically related to crime.
Well, and I encourage people to do that too. That there's already been a reading of the bill. They're going to vote on it soon. Contact your council member. They're all available online. Contact them and encourage them to pass the bill. But let me ask you another question. As far as juveniles go, Recently, there was, and let me add that I just read, when you talk about pretrial detention, I just read about some kid that was involved in a murder, and they put his rap sheet in the paper, and it was unbelievable how many crimes this kid had committed in such a short period of time. So, yeah, that's so important. But recently, there was a mother held liable in a case of mass shooting by the court. Should we hold parents liable?
So, I won't weigh in on that because clearly I'm not an attorney. And you know, I think there has to be some sort of accountability. To what degree, I don't know. But someone needs to be responsible. And I'll say this, you know, when we have a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old running around the District of Columbia at night robbing folks, somebody has to be accountable for that. How come that parent didn't know that child was outside of the home at 10, 11 o'clock at night, whether it's on a school night or whether it's on over the weekend? You know, somebody has to be, there has to be some accountability in that space. And, you know, I know that I understand about the situation where the parent was held accountable, but I don't know where I sit in that space, but I do know I sit in the space of knowing that parents need to be, there needs to be a much larger and broader discussion around parents being a lot more responsible for their children.
Yeah, and I think we all need to take responsibility in that sense. You know, if you see a 9-year-old out at midnight, I would call the police if I saw a 9-year-old wander around my neighborhood at midnight just to find out what he's doing, why he's there. And, you know, I came home one night and saw this guy trying to park one of those little cars that you can, you know, pick up on the street, and he couldn't do it. It was a big parking space, and I thought, wow, this guy's drunk. And when he got out of the car, he was like a 10-year-old boy. So I called the car company, and the car company said, oh, this happens all the time. All they need is their mom's cell phone, and they can walk up to the window, and, you know, and they said, thanks for calling. We'll follow up on it. And, yeah, I think we all need to do that. And when it comes to that, let me ask you, how's community policing going? That was the big thing. In North New Jersey, when I was a kid, we had a beat cop, and everybody in the neighborhood knew him. Are we still doing that? Are we still doing community policing? Are there cops out there on the beat that people know and build a relationship with?
Well, I'm reinstituting in some areas the foot beat because I think it's really, really important that businesses and homeowners and people that live in various areas know who their police officers are in the various PSAs or patrol service areas that is assigned in every district. I think, you know, we just launched the safety corridor commercial hubs, one of the first ones we launched over in Chinatown and Gallery Place, and that's a place or an area where we want to make sure that our officers are present, our officers are visible, whether they're on bike patrol or foot patrol, but an opportunity for them to really engage in that area and those businesses down there. And then there are two other areas that we will be looking to launch the safety corridor hubs on U Street and also in Anacostia here in the very near future. And again, another opportunity for us to have community policing, but I consider it relationship-based policing, because in order for our officers and in order for the community to know one another, you have to have a relationship. And so as you stated so eloquently, Senator Brown, about being able to pick up the phone and call the police, but know who your police officer is. And so we've been working very diligently about ensuring in different areas or certain areas across the district, but it is my hope that we can have that, the footbeats and some of the bicycle patrol officers in all of our communities as we continue to increase the number of officers that we have on the workforce.
Yeah, and we've had these really bold robberies in the middle of the day, haven't we? Not only the thing where mobs go in and clear out shelves in your local CVS, but I understand the Rolex store was robbed in the middle of the afternoon, and the Walmart, certainly in Chinatown, was robbed. Do we have any? I mean, that seems like a new phenomenon to me, a new trend. Is that a new trend, or has that always gone on?
Look, it's a new trend. I think that, you know, we do have those one-off occasions where those types of things happen. But what we have been doing to decrease and it decrease those crimes and to increase our presence is that we have retail theft police officers that are assigned to a lot of our businesses, especially those where we've seen a reoccurring increase of folks who just walk into some of these retail establishments and assume that it's their pantry. But we've been doing really good work in those spaces over the last couple of months to ensure that we are not only in those places, but we're also making significant arrests of those individuals who have been committing those retail theft crimes. And again, as part of Secure DC, you know, we want to be able to charge these folks with a felony so that these when we do apprehend them, that there is a longer sentencing period for them or penalty for them as opposed to this becoming a revolving door as it seems to be right now.
Well, what about police involvement? What about training the citizenry? Now, when I worked for a high-end retailer when I was in college, and I was trained in shoplifting, and I was the only guy in my store that ever caught a shoplifter. I caught two shoplifters while I was there. But it's because I was trained. The other employees weren't trained. They were hired to be clerks and stuff. And I had worked my way up to this high-end retailer by working for a really cheesy, you know, inexpensive retailer where they trained us all in it was a private security company that did it, but they trained us all in how to spot shoplifting. Is there something that we can do? Is there something the police department could do, even using civilian trainers to train citizens on how to help with these things or train store employees on what to look for and how to be helpful? Should we start a program like that? Should we have a program like that?
Well, I would disagree with having a program like that unless, you know, a person is specifically trained police officer. We have special police officers that are assigned to a lot of our retail establishments, and they go through a particular training. They carry firearms, and they have the authority to make an arrest or affect an arrest specifically related to those types of crimes. And we have our police officers, obviously, but I think from where I sit, in my perspective, we would not want a regular citizen engaging with someone who is committing a crime. We want to leave that to the law enforcement professionals to do that. If folks want to understand what we do in this space, we do have the Community Engagement Academy, which we host twice a year for any resident or any citizen that lives in the District of Columbia to meet with us and participate in a four-week-long program to understand what we do as law enforcement professionals here in the District of Columbia. And again, you can go to mpd.dc.gov in order to find out when we host our next Community Engagement Academy. But I will say this, and I'll say it again, that we should let law enforcement professionals address the crime that is happening within our community.
Yeah, I wouldn't say intervene, but just, you know, what to look for to call the police and things like that. And by the way, I've had a personal friend of mine go through that training that you're talking about to the academy, and she raves about it. She raved about it. She said it was one of the smartest things she ever did. Yeah, I encourage people to look into that. Well, we're starting to run out of time here, Chief. So tell me, what do you want to say? What question haven't I asked you? What do you want to add? What do you want to say?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for having me on your show, Senator Brown. I think being able to give folks an introspective look at what we're facing and what we're up against, and knowing that we are working very diligently as a police agency to drive crime down in the District of Columbia. I often say that even though crime is down, in comparison to this same time last year, I don't consider this as a moment of celebration because there is still a lot of work to do, because I understand when people don't feel safe despite what the numbers show, that's where the difference comes in between numbers and how people feel. And so it is my hope that in the very near future, we can with Secure DC, this omnibus bill, and if the DC Council passes it without any amendments, we can start to feel a lot better. I will say this, that, you know, the District of Columbia is still thriving. You know, I'm oftentimes out at night, you know, because that's just what I do. I'm oftentimes out throughout the day, and there are people that are still coming to the District of Columbia for many, many events, for various activities, the sports arena. I'm an avid, if you will, sports junkie. You know, I watch basketball, football, you name it. And people show up in the District of Columbia because, and I believe they show and they come because they do feel safe. You know, I'm oftentimes at Capital One Arena, and there are hundreds and hundreds of folks coming to attend the game. There's special concerts that are going on. You know, D.C. is still thriving. The nightlife area is thriving like no tomorrow. I mean, significant number of individuals and people who come to enjoy the culture of the District of Columbia. And, you know, my job is to ensure that we can continue to drive crime down, and certainly with the support of our citizens, the support of the residents, and continue to work with us in this space so that we can ensure that everyone is safe when they come to the district is the top of my priority. So, in closing, I would say, you know, thank you for giving me the opportunity to kind of spotlight some of the great work that we're doing, but also to ask the residents to stay engaged with your district commanders, because if there's anything that's going on in your community or in your area that we need to address, each one of those commanders are very passionate about the work that they're doing to support the citizens in their community or the residents in their community. I implore you to meet with them, get to know them, get to know what we're doing in your respective district.
Well, and I will add to that's how I got to know Chief Newsom when he was a commander. He sat in my living room and talked to our community group. And so they will come out and they will talk to you and they will engage with you. So, I agree with that 100%. You should reach out to them. But I'm also a sports junkie, Chief, but let's be honest, we need a better football team. Come on, we need to win a few games. And I'm an old Redskins fan, so I'm used to losing, but enough is enough. Chief Pam Smith, thank you for being gracious enough to take time out of what I consider the most difficult job in the District of Columbia. You give me great hope for the future, Chief. Thanks, and I will always be supportive, and let's hope everybody in our community will. Thanks for doing a great job.
Thank you, Senator Brown. I appreciate the vote of encouragement, and we're going to continue to do what we can. As I stated earlier, just give us a little bit of time. Crime is coming down.
Okay. Thank you. That's a great way to end the show. And folks, we'll see you next week with another great guest, I hope. And we're going to leave the show with what else could we play but the Bobby Fuller Four, and I fought the law, but the law won. Let's hope the law always wins. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
See you
Take
next
care.
Week.
Bye.
Bye.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to